Thank you to Lola Blankets for sponsoring this episode.
What Came Next is intended for mature audiences only. Episodes discuss topics that can be triggering, such as emotional, physical, and sexual violence, animal abuse, suicide, and murder. I am not a therapist, nor am I a doctor. If you're in need of support, please visit somethingwaswrong.com/resources for a list of nonprofit organizations that can help. Opinions expressed by my guests on the show are their own and do not necessarily represent the views of myself or Broken Cycle Media. Resources and source material are linked in the episode notes. Thank you so much for listening.
Mae Scott is a multi-crime survivor and author. Her story of survivorship begins at the age of 14 when she met the man she would eventually marry. And although their relationship would end violently and her ex-husband would face a potential life sentence for the harm he forced upon Mae, her legal battle didn't end there. After navigating the criminal justice processes as well as a treacherous family and divorce court journey, Mae now uses her experiences to bring awareness to others. The Broken Cycle Media team is deeply grateful for Mae's time, advocacy, and incredibly powerful perspectives.
We had some eyewitnesses the night that he was arrested, and that was the third night where the charges came from. He was charged ultimately with 5 felonies and 4 misdemeanors. After he was arrested, he was out from November 21st, 2022 until May 17th, 2024. He was living with his parents, and without him poisoning a lot of my thoughts and making me question my own reality, I was able to see things a lot more clearly. When he was arrested, there was immediate protection order put in place. I decided that this is it. I have been trying to leave for years, and now I really do have an avenue to do that. That following week was when I started to hear from the district attorney, their investigator, and the witness specialist. They said these were the charges they were looking to charge him with from that night. It would be helpful if I would participate in that. I never felt pressured or like they were waiting on bated breath for me to fully join forces with them or something. They were going to try to move forward and prosecute this regardless. They did say it is very helpful if I can actively participate in that. Once some of that initial shock wore off, and I started to tell people close to me, hearing from them some of their perspective of, we always knew something was wrong. The way he treats you and the kids is just so not okay. We didn't know if we should say anything. Are we overstepping? I went from feeling shocked and sad to really angry. And I told the district attorney that I would be happy to sit down with him and tell him everything, because I, at this point, was feeling very empowered to make this very real life situation of it ends with us, that I will never let him hurt me or my kids again. The district attorney, he had scheduled a meeting, and I went there with everything, including a lot of those daily things that happened, because I really didn't know what they could charge. I wasn't trying to get as many charges as I could stacked up. I just needed the district attorney to also see this full picture to know that these were not isolated incidents. It was part of the district attorney's strategy, he had told me, was proving that pattern of this behavior. They had an investigator and they worked through things. They called people that I had said were present at different things, and they ultimately determined they had enough evidence. We asked that the district attorney drop the child abuse charge so that the kids did not have to testify at a criminal procedure like that. When this all first started, the district attorney told me to expect this criminal process to take 2 years. It only took a year and a half. My ex was offered many plea deals that he declined to accept because he would have had to plead guilty. Some of those came with about 90 days in county jail. I would make an educated guess that his defense team encouraged him to take a deal, and he was the one who decided to go all the way to trial. But my ex's defense team took every route they could to postpone things. They subpoenaed me and my medical records, and I had to go get the medical records. I had to show up to court and bring them. They did a lot of these games trying to push things off and say that they needed this expert witness who's not going to be available, and we need to change the court dates. The district attorney, again, was incredible. I really feel like I hit the jackpot with how the criminal case was handled. We did this week-long trial. It was a circus trying to confuse the jury. I testified for 8 hours. I cannot tell you how much of that time was them asking me how I really knew that he had my phone that night. He sat there in trial and said he didn't take my phone. I think part of their strategy was to get me to snap on the stand and to say to the jury, like, see, you can't believe this lady. It was such a ridiculous ordeal. I learned so many things I kind of wish I didn't know. For instance, when I would take photos of myself after he hurt me, I would take a picture of my arm, my leg, whatever it was that had a bruise on it. When we went to trial and they showed those pictures, the defense was saying my face wasn't in that picture. So how can we prove that it was me? The district attorney would say the time, and this photo came from my phone. You can see it's like taken in the family home, all of these things. But they really tried to say that those photos weren't me. They told me that if he was found guilty of certain charges, that he would be immediately taken into custody because that is the law here with some of those charges. And that is what happened. He was found guilty on May 17th of 2024 and has been incarcerated ever since.
May's ex-husband was ultimately found guilty of 7 of the 9 charges against him. He was convicted of 5 felony charges that included sexual assault without consent, sexual contact without consent, and strangulation. He was also found guilty of 2 misdemeanor charges that included third-degree assault and obstruction of telephone communication.
They scheduled sentencing for a few months later, and we had to go back to court in the interim because his defense team was trying to get him released until sentencing. Luckily, the judge agreed that it wasn't in the community's best interest for him to be released, and so he stayed in county jail until sentencing. That also got postponed. The district attorney suggested that my kids make impact statements as well. He encouraged the older 2 kids to come to sentencing and read theirs. I don't know if this varies by state, but the district attorney asked if anybody else would want to say anything about how they were affected and impacted. And some people chose just to write letters to the judge instead of standing up and speaking. My oldest decided not to come and read hers. My middle son did come and read his, and then I read mine. I just feel like no matter how much I talk about it or how much I write about it, I can't quite portray how awful it was. I wanted the judge to hear how horrible he made our existence. I just feel like if you haven't lived something like it, you really can't quite imagine the terror.
On July 9, 2024, the Colorado Supreme Court suspended May's ex-husband's license to practice law for 3 years on an interim basis. On August 27, 2024, May's ex-husband was handed a sentence that will ultimately incarcerate him for 12 years to life. According to the Colorado Department of Corrections website, his first parole eligibility date will be in July of 2035. His mandatory parole runs 10 years to life, and he must register as a sex offender. Thank you again to Lola Blankets for sponsoring this episode. The very moment I received my first Lola blanket and ripped open that package, I knew that Lola was my new favorite blanket company. But when I had to buy my third Lola blanket for our house so my kids would stop fighting me over using the first, that was the moment I knew we'd never purchase from another blanket company again. And when I gifted a blanket to my friend for her new baby, and also to my kids' grandpa for the holidays, to see their reactions confirmed our love wasn't just ours, it's universal. That's because Lola is the world's number one blanket crafted with ultra-soft luxury faux fur and a signature four-way stretch, the kind of quality that instantly feels gift-worthy. Plus, it's machine washable, double-hemmed, and built to last for years, making it a truly meaningful long-term gift for someone special. To add, it stays flawless, no shedding, no pilling, no delicate care worries, which makes it a gift your partner can actually enjoy every single day, not just on Valentine's Day. Lola has quickly become my go-to for literally any occasion. Birthdays, weddings, housewarmings, thank yous, anniversaries, and especially Valentine's Day. It truly strikes that perfect balance of personal and luxurious, thoughtful, elevated, and something people genuinely get excited about. It's true, Lola isn't just a blanket. It's a home upgrade gift that lasts. And for a limited time, our listeners can get 40% off select Lola blanket products with code WCN at checkout. Just head to lolablankets.com and use the code WCN. After you purchase, they'll ask where you heard about them. Please support our show and let them know What Came Next sent you. Wrap yourself in luxury with Lola blankets.
I just wanted a divorce, and I wanted a very amicable divorce. I definitely had some rose-colored glasses on when I thought about what a divorce could be from a person like him. I really had no idea about this process. So I started consulting with divorce attorneys, and I realized I could not afford a divorce. These attorneys were asking for $10,000 retainers. I'm a stay-at-home mom with three kids. I have nothing. We don't have any money in our bank. There was a law firm that only did a $1,000 retainer and then charged a credit card every month. That first divorce attorney I had was young, and I tried to explain to her who she was going to be dealing with, and I don't think she believed me. After about 5 months, I got a different divorce attorney who luckily had a lot of experience with these very contentious things going on where you have even criminal charges. Bankruptcy was imminent. It was a very messy divorce. It took years. Our original divorce judge said basically we couldn't do anything until the criminal stuff was settled. He didn't know how to divorce us when there was all of this other stuff pending. And we argued and filed motions to bifurcate everything. He wanted at minimum 50-50 custody. He wanted the kids to go live in a hotel down near the prison on the weekends and spend their days with him. And that his parents would drive the kids Friday after school, come home Sunday night, his parents would pay for the hotel, food, whatever, take care of the kids, and they'd spend the weekends at the prison. And I remember our mediator almost laughing, and she said, I am not a fan of kids going to prison, especially when the parent is there for something that happened inside the home. Luckily, the mediator shut things down. It was months of back and forth to even get him to do any kind of visitation, because they said it had to be professionally supervised because he had been charged with child abuse. He only wanted to see his kids on his terms. He went months without seeing the kids. So for this entire time since his arrest, I have been the primary custodial parent. When I think about it, what do you need to get married? A marriage license, which doesn't cost very much money, and maybe a witness. And to get a divorce, you need your kidneys and, you know, like your firstborn. You got to like sell your soul. It should not be like that at all. In family court with the divorce, I really was a lamb to slaughter. I had no idea about all of these strategies and games. And it was a complete smear campaign about how I am a drug addict and an alcoholic. They were really worried that I was engaging in sexual activities for money. I remember thinking, how can they even say those things? And my attorney saying, like, people fight dirty in family court. This is what they do. Family court was gloves off, anything goes. I had to go through a deposition for the divorce, and I had to sit there for hours across the table from this female divorce attorney while she asked me how much I like anal sex, how much I like giving blowjobs, what color underwear I wear and what those different colors mean, and don't they indicate consent? I had to sit there while she told me how I should have handled my ex's abuse, all of the things that I should have done differently, and why didn't I just try this, and why didn't I do this, and how silly am I that this was the path that I took? A deposition is truly a free-for-all. You can object to a question, but there's nobody in there to redirect anything. And it got to the point that my attorney stood up and said, we are not doing this anymore. So we left the deposition, and they were trying to fine us for leaving the deposition early, to say that I had to resit at the deposition starting from the beginning and that we weren't allowed to object to questions, that my ex-father-in-law could do the deposition now instead of the divorce attorney. At one point during the divorce process, my ex-in-laws filed for grandparent visitation and said they wanted to get custody of the kids. They stand by that they never saw or heard anything, that their son is innocent. The post-separation abuse that I endured for those 2 years, I would argue, was worse than anything that happened in the marriage. Even after he was convicted, I am still married to the man who is sitting in prison for what he did to me. October 24th, 2024. We got a new divorce judge. We had a status conference. She went ahead and entered the divorce decree on that day. She ended up having to mute my ex. He was livid. He was yelling about how unfair that was. He needed more time. And she just said, this has been going on for almost 2 years. I am entering a divorce decree and you guys can figure everything else out later, which is what we had been asking for this entire time. And then we went to court on December 6th, 2024 for a final orders hearing. I was court ordered to pay my attorney, husband, spousal support while I was supporting his 3 kids and he was doing nothing. To be clear, I wasn't even seeking spousal support. We went to court for me to get child support. I am working as a social worker, providing for 3 children by myself. He is doing absolutely nothing, and I had to pay him $550.50 a month. I paid over $150,000 in attorney's fees to divorce my ex who is in prison. Again, it shouldn't be like that. There is always something that comes next in family court. I used to be terrified to check my email or to look at my phone. His strategy very much was killing me with paper, a million emails that have to get read and responded to, motion after motion after motion, and thinking, you know what else I'm going to do? I'm going to make it so her attorney fees are $10,000 a month. Divorce should not completely bankrupt families, lead people to have autoimmune diseases from all of the PTSD and trauma, take years of their lives. But I've done a lot of therapy and met just a lot of great people. My friends really were incredible. He isolated me to a degree, and he was not able to really cut off my ties to my friends. They were instrumental in my healing journey. And it was not only like not easy to get here, I would say it was impossible to get here. I don't even know how I am here. One of the things that helped me a lot, I've been in counseling and my kids have been in counseling and we do family counseling. We're big fans of counseling over here, which has been instrumental in my healing process. And I found a lot of accounts on social media that were helpful so that I didn't feel so alone. Well, I still have an amazing support system with family and friends. People don't know what to say. They really just don't quite know what you need, and you don't know what you need unless you've really experienced it. So having some support from people that have been there was very helpful. The other piece for me that is incredibly therapeutic and healing is music. Music got me to open my eyes to some of the unhealthy parts of my relationship way back before really any of the big violence happened or any of the arrest happened. Music helps you, I think, feel not alone. When you listen to lyrics and you hear that somebody else has experienced, maybe it doesn't have to be the exact same thing, but that pattern, there's something there that hooks you. Not to mention, we know that music just has healing elements in it with rhythms and the sound, the things that it does to our senses. Music saved my life over the last few years. It was a few months into the divorce process that my friend and I were joking about writing a book because she was saying everything that has happened is kind of unbelievable. Each of these things happening in isolation, maybe, but when you put it all together. So we joked about writing a book, and every time something else would happen, she would say, like, well, that'll just be the next chapter in your book. Then things got very desperate for me financially. So I started working full time January 4th, 2023. I knew immediately I had to get a job. I knew I couldn't depend on him or anything. I'm a single mom to three kids who need me to drive them and be present for a lot of things. I work from home, which I am so grateful to do. And I work full time. It just pays a little bit less because I get that benefit of the flexibility. And I started to think this book could benefit me financially, and it could possibly be a bit of a roadmap to other people, because the further I got into this divorce and criminal journey, and just seeing how big this need is, we have to talk about this. My story is actually like a dime a dozen. The book is called An Embarrassment of Pandas, Exposing an Abusive Family and a Flawed System. The way I came up with that title is pandas were a very important animal in my family with my ex and in-laws and our kids. We didn't find out what our youngest child was gender-wise, and we called that baby a panda. And when he was born, the little warming machine in the hospital, it actually said panda warmer on it. My kids' favorite stuffed animals were pandas. We had panda decorations in their bathrooms. And a group of pandas is called an embarrassment. Typically, that's because pandas are kind of funny and goofy, and people joke about how they don't know how pandas survived in the wild. I just felt like the way that my ex and his family behaved over these 3 years was truly embarrassing. The book really is about, from our younger age, of what our relationship looked like. And then it moves into the criminal case. And the majority of the book is about family court and trying to get a divorce. what it is the very true story of trying to divorce my abuser, who is sitting in prison for what he did to me. Writing the book was very healing for me because there were a lot of times over the years that I would think, was it really that bad? Did I overreact? I spent a lot of years apologizing to my kids that I shouldn't have done this. And when I was writing it and looking at everything together like that, it's so incredibly validating for me that no, I did not overreact. I didn't make any of this up. So writing it all out for me was very helpful. When I first started writing my book about this, it was about 800 pages. I wanted to include every single word about everything because for me, it all felt so important and so valid, and I needed everybody to know these things. And then when you kind of boil it down, I got to give myself a little pat on the back for making it through that. It was so hard. I thought by writing this, hopefully I can help other people feel seen and heard, and that this could be a bit of a resource for them, not in a coaching sense. I'm very clear in the book that my story is not your story, and that maybe something that I did might work for you, or it might be something you want to avoid when you see what happened when I tried it. The last section of the book, it's all about healing and that you can come out on the other side. And then hearing readers' reactions to it has been very healing and validating. I really appreciate everybody who takes the time not only to read the book, but also to give me feedback about it. The book is available on Amazon. It's An Embarrassment of Pandas by Mae Scott.
What would you change about these systems in place to better support victims?
If we could reform these courts to do less of the games, these are people's lives. And it feels like just a giant game of chess, whereas I wish it could be a little bit more linear and clear. I know there's always extenuating circumstances. We can spin things into a way that makes sense for us. But I still think there needs to be a more direct route from allegation to completing the journey. One of my friends is a state representative, and he has been amazing at asking me for some input about certain bills that they're trying to draft and wording, especially trying to be trauma-informed and victim-centered. One of the things that my friend has continued to say is, unfortunately, whatever we do moving forward is not going to change the past. It's not going to necessarily help me directly. And I've always said that's not what it's about. If one person does not have to go through what I went through, then that's a win.
What words of encouragement or support would you want to give listeners who can relate to any portion of your journey?
I would say when you need to give up, give yourself a minute to do that, to maybe sit down and say, that's it, I'm not doing it anymore. Because I think we need to allow ourselves and our brains to even explore that possibility a little bit. And it gets exhausting when people are constantly telling you, it's okay, it'll get better. All of these well-wishers and words of encouragement, which are beautiful. I'm not trying to poo-poo any of that. There are so many times when you think, I am the one exception. It is never going to get better for me. I am going to be in this horrible cycle and space for eternity. And I think we have to allow ourselves a little bit of that and to say, okay, fine, say I do give up. Really, what does that look like? What is that going to play out as? And I bet then you think, all right, that's not really what I want. But we need to allow ourselves to really not be okay. And that can make people very uncomfortable because people don't know how to handle that or sit with it. They want us to be okay. People want to help. My advice is sometimes just don't be okay. Just sit in the sad. And that is okay. And then set it aside and keep going. And you're going to push all those boulders up that hill, and you're not even going to realize that you got there someday. but you're going to get there. I definitely want to be a support. I received so much support over the last few years, and I want to pay it forward. I am happy to have conversations with people. You can find me on Instagram at mayscottofficial. You can email me, mayscottofficial@gmail.com. I think the more hands that we can get the book in, the more we can try to make change. Because I think when people read about these corrupt experiences in court, they do get a little fired up and want to try to advocate and make motion to reform the court system.
I appreciate your tenacity and your resilience. I think it's incredible all you've accomplished in such a little amount of time in terms of your healing and your sharing.
I was very motivated.
That is very clear, and I love that. And I thank you for that, because you're doing the hard work, not only the surviving and the getting through it, but also the sharing too.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. Next week on What Came Next.
He walks in his robe and he's like, "Hey, I'm Jeffrey. I've heard some great things about you." He asked me a little bit where I was from, how old I was. And I think that's where I went wrong when I started to tell him that I was taking care of my family. It truly fucked me up in a sense where I ended up not only in Jeffrey Epstein's hands, but many other abuses.
Thank you again to Lola Blankets for sponsoring this episode. Don't forget that for a limited time, our listeners can get 40% off select Lola Blankets products with code WCN at checkout. Just head to lolablankets.com and use code WCN. After you purchase, they'll ask where you heard about them. Please support our show and let them know What Came Next sent you. Wrap yourself in luxury with Lola Blankets.
What Came Next is a Broken Cycle Media production, co-produced by Amy B. Chesler and Tiffany Reese. If you'd like to help support What Came Next, you can leave us a positive review, support our sponsors, or follow Broken Cycle Media on Instagram at Broken Cycle Media. Check out the episode notes for sources, resources, and to follow our guests. Thank you again for listening.